Capital 263. Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. You're listening to the second part of our top 10 countdown of political moments in 2016. In part one, we counted down from number 10 to number 4. In part two, we'll be looking at our top three. We'll be looking at the moments that didn't quite make the cut but were quite noticeable. And then we'll be looking at what to look out for in 2017.
Talking about shockers, number three. Where's my 15 bids at?
That was a good one.
So in the president's birthday interview on National Broadcaster, he said that $15 billion had gone missing from the diamond revenue, from the diamonds in this country, through corruption and other leakages. $15 billion had gone missing through leakages and corruption. This was said by the president on national TV.
I'm still convinced he thumbsucked.
Yeah?
I think this is one moment I think he was just going for shock value. And he was just like...
Is the president known for saying loose and fast statements? Or was he given the wrong speech? Was he given the wrong speech?
No. It was an interview, guy. He was sitting there. He was having a good time. And
so
he can't say something.
Anyone who knows how much really got... You know, I was sitting there with my old man. Even he was shocked. He was like, that's a lot of money, guys.
No, $15 billion is a lot of money. And it's concerning that... $15 billion, a number that was given to us by the president, went missing and nothing has been done.
Nothing.
Not an inquiry, not even
the arresting of one customs official at the border.
Like, it's just the whole year has gone by.
Yeah, with nothing.
With nothing. No commission set up to investigate. No police officer put on the case that I know of that Constable Ningi is looking into where this $15 billion went.
And Constable Ningi in KwaZimba police station.
Marange. Where the diamonds come from. So, yeah, $15 billion. Not even the Minister of Mining was brought before a parliamentary committee.
Not even a cursory, like anything to just try and sing.
That's actually concerning to me. Is that in other scandals, Parliament has brought ministers and that sort of thing to the table. These parliamentary portfolio committees. Honorable Wajikajiena, is another one part of this whole factional thing.
Yes, that's why the Minister of Mines hasn't come in front of any parliamentary committee. Because Parliament, my understanding is these committees are run by the Lacoste faction. So who knows where the 15 bids is? Ask the army. Ask Lacoste.
Okay, when you put it like that.
So who's going to bring... Because if you look at my brief understanding of the way the Marange diamond fields were managed, is that of the five companies, all of them were either part army-owned or part state-owned, either through MMCZ or through the defense forces themselves. MMCZ, the board is compromised of generals. The Defense Forces, it's the permanent secretary of the army that signs all these deals. So if you had to ask someone where the money was, you're going to have to ask the army. And who is going to make that? Who are you going to ask them?
Yeah, that's a difficult position to be in. But the fact that you've been elected to this office to represent the people of Zimbabwe, I think somebody has to do it. And the fact is...
And we just did the army. Where's the 15 bids, eh?
Yeah, no. We really want to know what happened to that $15 billion. And if it was our... They were definitely involved. The Chinese.
No, they were.
They were definitely involved. Is that these things were just allowed to happen with no care, no regard.
In Putin.
I think... Yeah, that one's a tough one, eh? When you think about it, that one's just...
It's and just what our budget for 2017 is, what, 9 billion?
Huh? Are we not sitting at...
No, 4 billion, yeah, sorry. Our GDP... our budget is 4 billion. Our GDP might be 9 billion.
I was about to say 9.
So if we had had access to that funds, some of it going through legitimate channels, through Treasury, even with the ineptitude of this government, they still would have been able to pay salaries on time, still would have been able to make sure hospitals have medicines. Like, I don't know why we actually are laughing about it, because, you know, like I said one day, when people say the economy is suffering, it's Asuka who make the economy. It's people who are suffering. So this 15 billion is funny as a number on paper, but when you actually think of the lives that could be changed.
No, 15 billion is serious.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what can be done to, I suppose.
It's an industry.
Not even that, but just bring people to account, man. Just bring them to account. And you know what? Kudos to the MDC. I've given them a lot of flack this year for some of the things they've done, but they did have that march.
Oh, yeah.
That where's the $15 billion.
The most attended march this year?
Yeah, it's controversial, the numbers. In fact, marches have had controversial numbers. I think the Herald said there were, what, 300 people there.
Yeah. Newsday said
5,000 or something like
Daily
that.
Daily News was on 15.
So it's quite, yeah.
Zim I was on 20. So you don't even know.
I was there on the day because it's right close to where I work. And it's definitely up 3,000 people.
Yeah.
I can try to say that much. But that was the one thing they did. What they then failed to do, though, is they had, let's say, 3,000 people or 5,000 people in Africa Unity Square with a very small megaphone. And then it was done in like 10 minutes from the time they got to Africa Unity Square. So what happened was Tsvangirai came up and then he went into the square. He spoke on this megaphone that you couldn't actually hear unless you were right in front. And then everyone left. And from that day, nothing. Like, that was it. I think they held another couple of rallies elsewhere. Yeah, but look, is he the only person in the MDC?
No, if someone else in the MDC, like, for example, if Shamisa then decided to do that, he'll get reprimanded. What are you trying to do?
See, this is the problem with...
I'm just saying facts. I'm not saying I'm not agree with. I'm just telling you facts.
And I'm saying this is the problem with political parties in this country, is everyone wants to be the big man on campus. So then you have that. And then in retaliation to the MDC rally, ZANU-PF on Africa Day.
At the Million Man March.
And a Million Man March organized by...
funds from ZIMDEF. $430,000?
I was going to say organized by Comrade Kudzichipanga, who then usurped Comrade Togarepi as the Secretary for Youth in ZANU-PF. That's the first time you actually have somebody under the age of 40
being Secretary
for Youth.
Which is incredible, because I didn't realize that until that happened, that how can you have Secretary of Youth as who is no longer constitutionally defined as a youth?
And he was like, Togarepi was...
And before him, there was a 60-year-old.
Absalom Sikosana, 65 years old.
A 64 youth.
So, I mean, that's...
That's because you like young Dejas, doesn't mean you. You know anything about the youth, eh? Jesus.
Ah, wow. So, yeah, so they organized their retaliation march, Million Men March. People came up, they turned out. How many people were there?
No, there were people there. I'm not even going to deny that. In fact, I remember, you know how I know there were people there? Because I was at, at Chicken Inn along Lomagandi there. It took me like 3 hours to get some chicken, because all these guys were holding their $10 that they were paid to come and march. And they're all buying their food before they got back into their buses and go.
It wasn't paid to come and march. It was a per diem, so you wanted people to starve.
No, I'm just saying that that's how.
It wasn't fine.
There were people there.
It was an allowance,
and they were paid to be there.
Hey, they weren't paid to be there.
They were getting $10. I would have gone and marched as well.
They were given a food allowance.
Yes, I also wanted that food allowance.
Yeah, that's you, guys.
I would have gone and marched for that.
Get your political party to organize a march in which it gives you a food allowance.
We march on issues and what we believe in our hearts. Not because of the monetary incentive.
No, they were marching on issues, ka?
What was the issue of the Million Man March?
In solidarity with the president. Yes.
They're protesting us, protesting the president.
No. It's because people, the media especially, has been pushing this factionalism agenda and the succession issue, that the youth within ZANU-PF had to organize and say we are in solidarity with our president. And we want to show that we will be with the party, and 2018 is our candidate, and so forth and so forth.
I hope ZANU-PF youth is a smart come 2018 and demand parliamentary representation and ministers, because there's Ngoshaniso Mahara like a condom like this guy. They need to really.
But was Million Man March when they were Million Man March was not protesting.
It was. That's Million Man March was the one hour flag.
Ah, that was our flag. Yes, that was our flag.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
They were protesting.
No, they were.
And you know the thing is, the ruling party uses literally like a prophylactic. Put them on, do your business, discard them for the next 4 years. So I hope if they say no, we want 60% youth MPs, I will be very happy with that.
Our flag.
Mm.
Professor.
Talking about that, number two, we're leading up to the big one now. Number two is another serious issue, corruption.
Mm, corruption's heavy. Corruption in this country. Yeah.
And it actually is so heavy that it needed almost, because 15 billion is also corruption. But
it is, yeah. But
this needed its own thing. And yeah, I think it's second, because probably the biggest impact on our country this year has been corruption. And not just the cases we mentioned here, in terms of everything.
It's everywhere. It's from the police officer who says, let me see your reflector, or your honeycomb reflector isn't a honeycomb, or whatever it is, to the guys at whatever primary school or high school it is who demand something so that your son can get a
school place,
or daughter can get a place for grade zero. It's become extremely endemic in the society in general.
Yeah, it's like our national pastime is corruption now. And we are all responsible. We're all responsible.
Even in restaurants. Like, you know, when you go to
a Joganzi, do you think Coke knows that we're paying $10 for their bottles at roadblocks?
I did. But even in bars and restaurants,
yeah.
You know when it's full? And you spot just, the waiter and you just feel like, hey,
no, that's yes. Tipping. That's tipping. Okay. It's not corruption.
For service.
Yeah. No, it's really is on us as a country, that I don't think we do enough to combat corruption in our day to day lives.
You know, the mayor, Ben Manyenyeni, said at a meeting.
His worship,
that's the one I was looking for. His worship, Ben Manyenyeni, said at a public meeting that he held at Townhouse, he was speaking about Harare becoming a world-class city by 2025.
Yeah.
And he then said that if you're going to have a world-class city, then you'll need a world-class government.
Right? Yeah.
If you're going to have a world-class city, you're also going to need a world... He asked, do we have a world-class government? If you're going to have a world-class city, you're going to have a world-class town council. Do we have a world-class town council? And then finally he says, if you're going to have a world-class city, we're going to need a world-class citizen. Do we have world-class citizens in Harare? Was his question. And I think it's on the issue of corruption as well. Is, yes, the problem starts, or the biggest problem is at ZIMDEF, and at ZIMRA, and POTRAS, and NetOne, and all these other government institutions and parastatals. Yeah. But you as a citizen of this country, what is it that you have done to aid and abet corruption as well?
Mm.
It's just something. But yeah, speaking of the corruption scandals, I mentioned ZIMDEF.
Yeah, ZIMDEF was, 430,000 in cash. Chemaye Mwana. How much in diesel? I'm forgetting.
Maybe like 100,000 liters of diesel. Yeah.
Were taken from ZIMDEF and went into a number of entities and companies that were run by the deputy minister at the time, by the deputy minister with the minister's knowledge, or he claims he didn't know that the deputy minister owns these companies. Anyway, the minister in question is Professor Jonathan Moyo. He also used some money from ZIMDEF to buy bicycles for the chiefs and the traditional leaders in Cholocho. And then he self-described himself on Twitter as a Robin Hood. But either way, the money was taken up procedurally.
He said he'd rather be Robin Hood than a murderous.
Yes, something. I'm trying to allude a murderous tribalist. Was
tribalist,
it?
Yeah. So he then claims that he didn't actually say he was Robin Hood, but he was just saying he'd rather be, you know. But yeah, so Prof Moyo, he denied all things. He said he didn't know that the money was going into his deputy minister, Gandawa's
company. So he now threw the deputy minister under the bus.
He did. He said, but yeah, honestly, wait, you are the guy, I suppose, who signs off on these things. Or at least the reports come to you. And you see, Henry, if you are my deputy minister, surely, I should have some inclination of where, who at least I want to see who the CEO of this company is. Right? Yeah. If I'm giving money to Delta, I want to know who runs
the
Delta.
Directors. Yeah.
At least let me know who runs these companies, because you could be giving money to a murderous tribalist.
Yeah.
For all you we could. Know. No, but seriously, you could.
You can.
You could be giving money to the mafia. And it's on that. It shows how incompetent at his work he was.
Yeah. He. If anything, he's guilty of gross negligence. At the bare minimum.
At the bare minimum. Yeah.
At the worst, he was willfully corrupt. And the thing is, if you look at his sordid history with money, I don't think he should be allowed to sign even a family bank account, to be honest. But let's not throw accusations around. Let's wait for the courts and the Zimbabwean Anti-Corruption Commission to come to their conclusion. But even that institute, the Zimbabwean Anti-Corruption Commission, it's compromised. My God, it's compromised.
Yeah, I don't think there's any institution in this country which is not compromised.
Yeah. The Zimra scandal. Zimra, after an internal audit, then suspended Gershon Passy and about five other top managers. And it's come out about 20 million in money is unaccounted for over the period of Passy's time there. It's still ongoing. I don't actually know where it's going to go, but what's worrying is that he's suspended on leave with salary, so he's fine, man.
No, I think didn't his salary...
did they finally stop it?
I think they did.
They did. But yeah, initially when the first article I read, he literally would have told me, just go home, we'll sort this out. And then they had to suspend his deputy because his deputy was trying to cover his tracks for him, and then they had to like get rid of five top managers at Zimra there.
Yeah, no, Zimra's special. The Passy one for me was serious because he's alleged to also have brought in a vehicle. I think it was a Toyota Land Cruiser,
which was brought in as a Realm. For those who don't know what a Realm is, like a little tiny car.
Yeah, so he brought. So he, well, really, that's what it is.
Yeah.
He brought in and he paid the
duty.
Equivalent to that of a Realm.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you're the head of Zimra.
And I'm sure they even have perks that, you know,
allow certain discounts, you know?
It's not like he's,
So, I mean, I don't understand why he would do such a thing. But I suppose it's just if you see that you can get away with it,
And Zimra is the revenue authority. And if you've ever been through past the Baitbridge border post driving, you would know how corrupt these people at the bottom are. And he's the one that's meant to be, you know, fighting corruption. And these guys are answerable to him when they all know how corrupt he is. So nothing, of course, is going to change.
And then there's the case as well of Mr. Charlton Shihuri, who faked his O-level certificate, and then he faked other certificates.
I completely forgot about that
one. The audit brought out this guy has four O levels. He's been working for Zimra for 13 years, forged his qualifications.
And what was he doing?
He was the loss control.
Ah, so of course they're making losses, guys. Loss control guy in the former O levels.
He was the loss control director.
You can't actually make this stuff up, eh?
No, it's
the loss control director.
He was the loss control director, and he had four levels. So, Zimra is just a problem. Zimra. Then you have Potras,
yes. Is that the Super Mandiwanzira one?
Yes, Honorable Mandiwanzira was implicated in having
abused Potras, which is a parastatal linked to the Ministry of ICT. And not reporting directly. So he used Potras funds to purchase himself a vehicle.
Yeah, basically.
He bought a car with Potter's money.
But he says that he is
entitled to one.
Entitled to a service vehicle.
From Potter's. Does he work for Potter's?
No, but what it is that Treasury or who can get money. I think he said in an interview that Treasury can get money from certain institutions, yeah, from its parastatals to provide vehicles for these situations.
I thought CMED.
In terms of service vehicle.
I thought CMED.
CMED, that was the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The central vehicle was the one who allocates vehicles for everyone. So why was he then getting money himself to do it?
Look, I'm not sure how these things are supposed to operate, but this is what he said. Of course, it doesn't seem to be the way things were supposed to operate, yeah, which is then why it becomes a corruption scandal. But yeah, he did say that
Then
he was entitled to the car.
Well, yeah, while we're on Super, Honorable Mandigwanzire and his ministry, where the Net One scandal as well, Ruwa'ad Kangai. There's actually so many moving parts to this that it's really confusing even for myself. There's the one end where Mr. Kangai, who was CEO of Net One, accused Mr. Mandigwanzire forcing Huawei upon Net One for a $4 million contract. That's on one side, and then there's Mr. Kangai's own issues. Where he's accused of, amongst other things, taking money directly from Net One, building base stations on his relatives' homes so that they get the rentals from these base stations, amongst other things of not seeking council permission before he built base stations, therefore forcing Net One to have to pay regularization fees. Instead of paying a $200 application fee, you now have to pay almost $2,000 in regularization fees. So much going on. Anyway, Mr. Kangai is now on forced leave. They've pretty much cleared everyone out at Net One. And he then wrote a letter to the president asking for his intervention in this issue, claiming that the president was aware of all these problems and whatnot. One has to realize that Kangai had been at Net One or CEO of Net One since the mid-90s, which is one of those things that it doesn't matter whether it's corporates or government or anything, that you need some type of leadership renewal, because obviously this guy was treating Net One like his personal kingdom.
No, you do, especially in the corporate. You need guys with new ideas, number one. We are in changing times, and Net One, where it is, where its competitors are, you want someone who can change,
yeah,
your business. And you also just generally don't want the same corporate culture for 20-odd years. But you're quite right. And it's, for me, it's interesting that whenever somebody is caught up in corruption,
yeah,
the one place they run, not interesting, but I suppose it's you're trying to save your ass, is that you go to the president.
Yeah, because the president is all-seeing, all-knowing,
all-deciding.
Godfather of a mafia.
All-deciding.
Literally, because, is a mafioso. Look, if you
when,
see...
when Zach went after Prof.
He went and
Robin Hood Mulevu, they... it was at the Politburo, and the president said, okay, hold up, the party is going to investigate.
Mm.
Which for me also is a big issue, is that you have a minister accused of corruption
by independent body,
by the Anti-Corruption Commission, which is meant to investigate
corruption,
but the president then stops his arrest and says the party ZANU-PF will look into it.
And bear in mind, this was at a Politburo, not at a cabinet meeting. So this is during a party meeting. So it was not even government business that they should have been discussing. They should have been discussing party business.
It's incredible.
So when we say mafia.
Look, they are the governing party. So I will give them that. When they are discussing party, there has become a, there is no line.
But
right
the thing
now.
Is, this,
right now there is no line. between party and state.
But there's non-cabinet ministers that sit on political bureau that are now having influence in matters that are beyond their purview because they were neither appointed nor elected.
Is everyone in Politburo? No, you're right. No. Yes,
so there's people in Politburo who are not cabinet ministers.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But they are now obviously making decisions about the country.
Yeah, no, but they are because at the end of the day, though, the party's mandate then governs what the government does.
Yeah, no, I don't mind.
So it there is going to be that flow of information. My issue then becomes, though, that on many occasions, and this goes into corruption as well, you have party business superseding state business. Mm. So, for example, Politburo is usually held on a Wednesday. Wednesday is the day that ministers are supposed to be in parliament for question and answer.
But they never go.
Half the time they're not there because they're sitting in Politburo.
Yeah.
And it's an issue that has come up time and time again. The Speaker of Parliament has threatened to read the riot act in parliament and say these guys should come. The Vice President has been brought into question and said, please tell your ministers to come to parliament.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he's more often than not there.
Yeah.
And he will take whatever questions that he must because he is the vice president.
Yeah,
but that's not what we want from him.
We
want the minister responsible to answer questions. So I think in the interest of ministers answering questions, I would put out a humble request to those who are listening within the ZANPF Politburo to please change your Politburo meetings to Thursdays.
Even Mondays.
Or Mondays or Fridays. Hey,
why don't they have it on a Sunday at Bushungu Dairies, man?
Look, you can whatever day that is not Wednesday.
Come have them on Maestro on Thursday nights at Boots.
That is not Wednesday, because on Wednesday we really would like
our ministers
in Parliament to answer
which
questions.
They're constitutionally mandated to do, isn't it?
They are constitutionally mandated to sit there and answer questions. Because also, our MPs, I don't know, Our MPs must ask real questions, but our MPs must also come to the constituents so that we can pose questions to them that they will then take to Parliament. I don't know if your MP does. One of the MPs who I know who reaches out a lot is JC Manjome.
She does. She's actually my MP in... that's where I stay. I'm in a constituency.
So she,
but maybe 2018, Jesse, coming for you. I'm joking.
Right. I mean, corruption is the biggest thing.
Mm.
And it's holding us back. But I think now, since we're done with that...
Without further ado, number one. #1. This flag. # Tajamuka. # Munwesim Road. #...
The year of the hashtag.
Yes. The most memorable or defining political phenomenon in Zimbabwean politics this year has been social movements, online social movements, the hashtag movements, and the personalities that the hashtag movement has presented us. And this had its genesis in the This Flag movement with the good pastor Evan and everything that he tried to do, did achieve, and his subsequent defection to America. The hashtag movement. What do you think?
First and foremost, you know, it was about 8 months ago. When was it? What month was Pastor Ivan's first video?
Pastor Ivan's first video was in March.
In March.
Yeah. And it really, you know, the thing is, I was actually having a chat to people about this. The videos came. There were quite a number of. There was, if you actually remember, let's try and cast ourselves back to that time. There was the video for This Flag. Then a small group of people, sort of moving around with this flag, with the flag, national flag, taking it to work, doing that kind of thing. Then they had the 25 days where you're meant to be wearing the flag for 25 days. And then that happened, and then that passed. And then the teachers hadn't been paid around end of June, July, and they called for a stay away. And then the This Flag movement said, in solidarity with teachers, etc., etc. We're also going to get involved in a protest movement and shutting down them. So the first major real victory of the This Flag movement was the shutdown on the 6th of July. And then I suppose the rest is history, isn't it?
It is. For me, the most interesting moment was the start of it all.
Yeah.
Is that Pastor Ivan came out, flag around his neck.
Good day citizens.
I think it was
a good day citizen, what is it?
I think it just starts as flag. Wait, let's play a little bit of it,
yeah,
and then get back into it.
This flag. This beautiful flag. They tell me that the green is for the vegetation and for the crops. I don't see any crops in my country.
Okay, I think we can stop right.
I don't see any crops in our country.
Right? So
bars.
He came with some bars. He went in, you know, and as he says, it was out of frustration in the sense that he wanted to pay school fees for his
child,
but
he couldn't afford it
and he didn't know what to do. So he's made this video and it went viral. I remember when I received it, I was like, "Aako blaza vande vapi?" Like generally, I was like, what is this, you know? But it resonated with a lot of people. A lot of people then started to think, you know, these are real concerns.
And real. And they were so poetic, beautifully packaged.
Well, he's a pastor, Kasaka, you know, it's part and parcel of what he does. But it really did touch a lot of people. And it wasn't political in the sense that it wasn't something that was speaking politically charged language.
Yeah.
It was just, this is how I'm feeling, this is what it was. So that started something. And as you mentioned, it went through a process. He started making more videos. He then started asking people to
stay away,
wear the flag. He asked for the stay away. What was also equally interesting about picking the flag was that he chose a national
symbol. Yeah.
And people rallied around that. That's when our flag then came out in retaliation.
And where the Million Man March, our flag, etc.
But at the end of the day, this flag carried more prominence.
Yeah.
And because it was a national symbol, you'd have thought that there's nothing. It's hard. It's actually, government's in a tricky position because right now, I remember, I think it's at the cricket match in Bulawayo, where people were having their flags taken away from them.
Yeah, it was.
But it's ridiculous that it's now somewhat of a crime to have
a national
flag.
You don't see them being sold on the side of the road anymore.
It's banned from being sold and from being abused.
You can't wear a badge which has the flag colors in parliament. Two parliamentarians have been kicked out.
You see.
Nonsense.
But
so the government is afraid of its own national flag.
It's absolutely brilliant, but I actually think it's brilliant that that's what it was. But, you know, the movement then went along. Pastor Ivan grew. He got a following. He was arrested.
And, you know, his arrest initially for just disruptive behavior, wasn't it? Why was he initially arrested? Because then the charges were later amended to subverting a constitutionally elected government, which is basically treason. You know, that's when effectively you could say that the government helped organize this flag's first mass rally, because a lot of people, myself included.
He was first charged with inciting violence.
Inciting violence, yeah. A lot of
that was when, during the stayaways, the first stayaway, that was when there were clashes between the police and the combi operators.
Yes.
So then pinned, because this flag claimed success of that stairway, it was then pinned on him. So he was charged with inciting violence, then charged with attempting to subvert a constitutionally elected government.
They amended the charges as he was there. And then,
which is why he got out.
Yeah. So then just on a technicality, actually.
Yeah.
So I was there, and at least, I don't know, I'm not good at estimating numbers, I won't, but I'm just looking at the size of that crowd, and you could definitely, it was definitely 1,000+ throughout the day. Yeah,
definitely. There were a lot of people
there. Yeah. And you could say that this was this flag's first rally and last at that. Because he was then subsequently released, got on a flight and left.
Now he's eating McDonald's and Burger King.
No, I think his legacy will always be that, you know, he really showed that something can be started online and then be taken to the streets, technically. And no one can argue against that. I think there's lots of people who say, well, the stairway wouldn't have been successful if the combis hadn't started or the teachers hadn't been paid. Yeah, but I challenge you to look at, in history, a revolution that hasn't been started by an opportunist politically taking advantage of the things on the ground. You know, any of the Arab Springs, any, historically speaking, it's literally taking the opportunity of what's on the ground. So if you see teachers are going to strike, then call your stay away on the same day because you're likely to be successful. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know why people are always so negative about that.
Do you know what? Actually, for me, it then comes to taking stock of then what happened. Because when the next stay away happened, you didn't have the same conditions that you had in the first stay away. And I suppose you're going to try and see if you can win. But then it didn't fail.
Yeah.
It didn't, and they failed. And then looking to see how we can then do it again, because then you end up repeating the same things
with
failed results. And it happened with the stay away, the multiple failed stay away of bond notes. And yes, the government banned stay aways. And yes, police presence increased during times when people said that they were going, not even stay aways, that was protests.
Protests, no, but the protests were not necessarily past the heaven. Protests were
Nana Stems, Rwazwa,
Patso Nzamara, Linda, Promise Mukawananzi, like when all these. And they wouldn't have had as big a voice. I'm not saying they wouldn't be there. They wouldn't have had as big a voice if it wasn't for the platform that this flag had created.
I completely agree with that. I think he sparked something in the citizen.
In the citizenary.
In the citizen, in the individual person. Because people are now coming out and actually speaking about these things a lot more. So he did do something there. But on the issue of stairways is that the first one, it was the conditions. The second one didn't work. Was there a third?
No.
The second one was when he was then arrested, wasn't it? Or was that the third one?
That was the third one.
So there were two.
The first one was successful because of the teachers. The second one was semi. It was, you know, businesses closed up until like 12 and they saw nothing was happening. Then they opened. And then the third one was just an absolute,
but
unfortunately.
But then it played to his advantage because in the sense that's when they had that mass rally outside Rotten Row.
More like a prayer meeting. But Tajamuka, Nera, and other political parties then decided instead of stairways, let's protest. So they had anti-bondnotes protest and
Tajamuka actually started around SI-64.
Yeah, sorry.
In Baitbridge. Where,
but was that Tajamuka or they were just, I don't think that was organized by, I don't think they claimed it.
They claimed it, yeah.
You just take advantage of your situations. I don't think that any of the Tajamuka leaders were in Baitbridge at the time.
Yeah, fair enough. But they, look, these cross-border traders protested.
Yeah.
And Tajamuka then claimed it.
Yeah, then in August, you had the Nera, which got quite violent quite quickly. It's one that, if you guys have seen the famous image of protesters holding up the Robert Mugabe Road sign, it's where I went. I got tear gassed.
So the smashed helmet.
Yeah. Me and.
There was also this gown. There was
gown,
that one. That one coincided with the bond notes one.
Yes.
Where people were tear gassed as well outside the Ministry of Finance.
Yeah, so that was, I was there. That was very peaceful march of maybe about 500 people max up until you got to the Ministry of Finance. They went upstairs, delivered their petition to Chinamasa, got back downstairs, and then were marching towards Parliament to deliver a second petition. And that's when things got, for lack of a better word, lit.
But the reason why is because people were marching past Monomotapa building,
yes,
which is
the headquarters. Which is the president?
Which is Office of the President, yeah. And they were singing that song, that Tichak Visa song.
Yes.
And so the
police were like, nah, player.
Look, all I'm saying is if you're passing my office and you're singing your obscenities,
you must be tear gas.
No, I'm not saying you must be tear gas.
So that was this flag, the social movements, the hashtag movements. I mean, to a large extent, I don't think we would even be podcasting, or a lot of us wouldn't be speaking about politics online in our homes, with our grandparents, with anyone, if it hadn't been for the sort of opening up of the dialogue on the conversational space that this flag, the Jamuka ETC did. And if you see that, the humanizing influence of having ministers and MPs on Twitter and us being able to tweet our nonsense and being like, hey, you know what? I haven't been snatched up in the middle of the night by calling Robin Hood. Really, really, really did have an effect on politically.
It certainly has changed. What I want to see is what happens next year with these movements, what happens in terms of the citizenry. The leadership of it. Pastor Ivan has left. It's not without leadership.
It is not. Actually, talking about that, should we get onto, or do you want to do honorable mentions first, or who to look out for next year?
So that was our number one, this flag, certainly, the social media movements, so just all that things. I think honorable mentions, we can do that very quickly, because I think we've been speaking for a while now.
Yeah, but, it's a long year, though.
It has been quite a long year. In terms of honorable mentions, ZIMPF?
Yeah, ZIMPF being launched. It's actually quite big, but maybe we'll see how they are in 2017. And they haven't had their Congress yet. And also Grand Coalition will come about. But ZIMPF being launched is probably the biggest submission from this list. But, they got launched and that's it. There's nothing else to say.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Then you have Vice President Mpoko moving out of Rainbow Towers. Shout out to you, my guy. You have saved my taxes. I pay taxes. Yeah, it's rough out here, dog.
Do you shop at Choppies?
No, I don't shop at Choppies. Right.
Another one is Simbarashe. What's his last name? I always forget.
Chikore.
Chikore, yes. The president's son-in-law being appointed as CEO of Air Zimbabwe, the country's only national carrier, after being...
COO.
Is he CEO or CEO? COO, yeah. Yes. Chief Operating Officer.
Yeah.
After having spent the last year and a half as manager at Gushungo Dairies, so obviously he was infinitely qualified.
Indeed. Yeah. Shout out to you, Koma Simba.
Yes, please, please, please.
We just hope that we, get good service on Air Zimbabwe, that ministers and vice presidents don't delay flights.
Which they do still. So basically what he's CEO of Air Zim. Robert is the biggest user of Air Zim. So he's just basically his dad, his father-in-law's personal flight. flight attendant.
Yeah, I suppose you could say that. Of course. Then there was we mentioned it, Joao and Chinamasa's beef.
Yeah, no.
Over yeah,
little boy being publicly reprimanded.
Yeah, and he's been quiet ever since.
Really has been quiet.
He's been quiet ever since. Something we didn't mention though, when we mentioned AC and when we mentioned
their little fallout.
That fallout between AC and Joao. It was what sparked AC
leaving ZANU-PF and going to form his own party.
So I think it was quite important.
Bond Notes, of course. Bond Notes
was serious.
Yeah.
Bond Notes was probably one of the most serious things this year. But we'll just have to see how they play out. I think we'll mention that in what to look out for in 2017.
Yeah, you have something you want to play for us?
Yes, I do. This for me is my favorite political moment of 2016.
Kana ukarota nyika ino isina tongwe nezanpiri muka ubike doro kuti hope dzadzipisa ikado.
Mudzimu yakundirasha.
Eh, sanpaope dzakadai. So that's for all of you who think kuti 2018 zano ichabuda. Bikaidoro.
But maybe our mudzimu will work out, eh?
So that was 2016 has been quite a year.
It has been quite a year. 2017 is going to be even more of a year. We're hoping for lots of things, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of surprises. But who should we watch out for in 2017?
2017, first person I'm watching out for is Advocate Fadzai Mahere. She's come strong.
She's on a rise and rising.
Yeah, she is. She's on a roll on the back of on the back end of 2016.
Yeah,
she for me is the de facto leader of this flag or the citizens' movement, whatever. You know, you might call it. She was arrested for public disorder, protest, something. But it was on the.
It wasn't intentional, whatever.
Yeah, happened. It was on the day of the
bond notes.
Bond notes.
Anti-bond notes. The last anti-bond notes protest.
Yeah. So I want to see what happens there. She's called out the banks,
and she's been quite successful in calling out the banks. Charges. Changing of bank conditions by Stanbic. She wrote a Facebook post. They retracted. She wanted a class action lawsuit for high bank charges. The RBZ preempted her and sorted that out. So she's been on a rise and rise, and definitely will be someone to look out for in 2017.
Yeah. I want to see if she's going to enter politics.
Yeah. I'm talking about that. I think Dr. Patson Zamara will enter politics next year.
Really?
I don't know. I hope he does, but I think he will.
Okay.
He's also someone to
look out for
on that same note. A couple of victories from him this year, but he's a very motivated person, and has quite a personal following as well.
Stan Jorwadza in the same breath?
Not in the same breath, but definitely
no. In terms
afterwards.
Of no. Yeah. Listen, no. I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in terms of entering politics.
Yeah. No.
All these. Activists,
yeah,
and some of them have been
Linda is already Sarita, a politician,
yeah.
Actually,
I want to see how they move, because activism will only take you so far,
yeah,
and most of it has been lukewarm,
yeah. The performance of Bond Notes, and
my
prediction and the Bond Note episode that by June, July, we won't be able to see any US dollars anymore, but we'll see how that goes,
yeah. Definitely interested to see what will happen with the Bond Notes. In the same area, because it's economy, what happens with Command Agriculture as well. That's big, that's come out of, you know,
if we can, what was the claim? How many tons, megatons are we gonna?
2 million.
2 million. Mm. Yeah, so we'll look out to see that.
2 million tons. So
or will we be disappointed again? Tune in next time.
No, but it'll be very interesting to see what happens with Bond Notes, and Command Agriculture, because that for us, that's where our economy is.
Yeah.
Edged, I suppose.
Grand Coalition, looking to see if they'll be able to make some kind of coherent coalition work.
Let's make a call on that.
I believe that MDCT and ZIMPF will have a coalition by August. It'll fall apart around June 2018, and then they'll have an electoral pact. But that's my call, is that at the very least MDCT and ZIMPF will have a coalition at some point. So it won't necessarily be a grand coalition.
Okay. I think we're going to have a coalition 2018. Mm. I think between now and then, beginning of 2018, I say. Between now and then, unless somebody dies.
It's too much to hope for.
No, like
I shouldn't
unless,
say that. Sorry, I apologize.
I mean, unless, because look, none of the leaders of MDC, ZIMPF, PDP, what's the other one? Mavambo,
MDC, Ngube.
Ngube, yeah. And nobody, none of those individuals is going to step down.
Yeah.
And the biggest two are Joyce Mujuru and
Morgan Tsvangirai.
So unless one of them.
Guys, why do we keep saying Joyce Mujuru is the biggest based off rally numbers?
In that coalition.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying that we've been talking about coalitions, and are we saying that because she can get 2,000 people at a rally, she's now the second biggest opposition party in this country?
I think because she was once the vice president of this country, she has sort of been given this leeway. And
yeah,
also
no.
She left ZANU-PF. So it's assumed she left with followers, because she did have those provincial chairpersons that she left with. About how many were there? 6 or 7 of them?
Yeah.
That she left with. So it's assumed that she has this following with the, from ex-ZANU-PF. But as we've
quickly learned that a ZANU-PF follower is a ZANU-PF follower, not a Mujuru, not a Mtsonga, not a... Anyway, we'll see what happens at the elections. I think she needs the, to be honest, she needs a coalition more than anyone at the moment, if you actually think about
it. No, that's true. I agree.
Because if the MDC goes it alone, it will lose, but will ZANU-PF be able to win a significant amount of seats at this point? I don't think so.
Probably not.
I don't think its stronghold in Mashonaland, it will be able to wrestle them from ZANU-PF without a coalition's help.
So it's going to be interesting. And then finally, to look out for in 2017, ZEC says that it will start registering voters in July 2017. So please go and register. Once ZEC says, Mangwana Tirukutanga, tomorrow we are starting to register voters. Mm. Make sure that you go. Don't wait for
anything.
The last day, go
and register to vote.
Make sure you're registered. Even if you know personally in your heart there's no one you want to vote for, and you might not vote in 2018, just make sure that you're registered because you don't know what could happen. So I'm definitely interested to see.
And I might run, so, you know, I need your support. Chris is also running.
I get out of here. I'm not running for anything.
And we'll be here 2017.
Yeah, no, we'll
be here. So us look forward to next year.
I was going to say, on the issue of ZEC, it's interesting to see what will happen in the event that Justice Makarao is appointed Chief Justice.
Yeah, that'll be...
Because she's the head of ZEC. So just to see what happens there. Also on that Chief Justice issue, that's something to look out for. Because it's spilling into 2017. Yeah. What happens. We will be here, Politics and Beyond, definitely.
Holding your hand throughout next year.
Yeah, taking you through what happens.
Lots of updates, lots of changes, and lots of growth coming.
Lots of interviews as well. We'll definitely try to get some interesting people. If we could get Justice Makarao, you know, we would. If we could get, you know, all the people that we've spoken about.
We even get your small house from Gland.
That's your small house from Gland, my friend.
Lots of interviews coming up. We're going to try and get everyone who's spoken about to come and join us. And also just, we're loving your feedback. Thanks to everyone that's given feedback, especially for this for this episode. At the Big Induna, at Soro Makamba, at just_Midzi. Thank you all you guys at Tawi. Thanks you guys for giving us feedback. Mzi at Nzo Suwani. Thanks for your moments. You can hear we actually spoke about those. Obviously at Omagaisa, you also gave us a couple of ideas for this. And thanks for everyone for listening.
Indeed. Thank you very much also to all the people that we've sourced information from. I know Alex Magaisa is definitely number one up there.
The Herald as well.
Yes, indeed.
The Herald, definitely. It's really terrible. Once you shift through the propaganda of the Herald, they're really quite factual. Well-researched anyway. So let's not talk about facts.
So thank you very much. We hope you will continue listening and continue sharing your thoughts with us, helping the conversation grow. So that, you know, we can create a better political space in this country.
For you?
Yes, for me? You, for me, for everybody.
Everyone.
So, right.
Thank you,
like
guys.
Our page on Facebook, Politics and Beyond. Follow us on Twitter at BeyondPolyZW. At BeyondPolyZW. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba, at Chris Charamba on social media. Follow me and share.
And I've been Tawanda Henry Beatty, at Henry Beatty on social media. And yeah, you're listening to us on Capital 263 FM.
There is no FM. We are
Come on, just like don't like kill my dreams, please. Anyway, Capital 263, and shout out to Onai for giving us this platform.
Yeah, our producer will kill you if you had that FM.
Bye.
And now, Capital 263.